Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod here to do our Big Ten year in review as we discuss the rest of the Big Ten since we did Michigan State last week and how things went. So before we begin, a quick word of thanks to all of you who support the show via one-time gifts and on a recurring basis. Special thanks to Patreon supporters at the Mateen Cleaves level, Bill Church, Brian O'Donnell, and Chad Hickey. Those are the Draymond Green supporters, Adam Walzak, Dan Rankin, James Benton, Jim L., Michael Bosnick, Paul Marsh, and Scott Driscoll. And of course, to all the Scott Scowl supporters on Patreon, as well as Rich Wagner and Kenneth Kremet on Substack. If you appreciate the MSU content we put out, head on over to thefinalfourisnotintheschedule.com/support to reach the necessary links. Also, now that the NCAA tournament is done, we have our final bracket standings out of 116 entries. Our first place finisher was Ryan Lundquist. Second place, my wife, Marcy. Third was Cameron, who I'm still trying to get a hold of. Number fourth was Michael Emmerich. And then other notables, I finished at 10th. I actually was almost won, had pretty won that game. I'd have won the whole bracket, which would have been kind of weird. 25th was Bracket Dom. 48th was Kurt from the Brothers Jester Gutters. 64th was Gabe at Nudge.
That's where we stopped talking.
We're going to go one more. And 112th was Rod.
Wow.
So someone who's behind you picked UConn, and so they passed you. Got and pushed you down to 112th of 116. And the actually last place was my friend's best friend or my son's best friend. So it was actually quite a discussion the other night because my wife had been at work and a lot of her coworkers thought it was kind of a raw deal that she didn't get a prize for getting second place. And so I said, it's not going to happen. I said, I could give you something else. And she just kind of looked at me, paused, and said, yeah, no. So anyway, that's where things stopped. We're going to talk about the rest of the Big Ten, obviously. This will be a little bit freeform. So let's just discuss the Big Ten in general. I mean, I think what has been a point of discussion, certainly for the last 10 to 15 years, if not at least since Michigan State won the NCAA tournament back in 2000, there hasn't been an NCAA championship coming out of the Big Ten for 24 years in a row now. I know we talked about last summer. So that is certainly a point of discussion. The Big Ten didn't have as many teams in the NCAA tournament this year as previous years, but I think most teams kind of went as expected. Purdue made the finals as a number one seed. Illinois was the next highest seed at 3, and they made it to the Elite Eight. And then all the other seeded teams were not expected to make the second weekend, and none of them did. So, you know, in some ways, the Big Ten did not under or overperform, I guess you could say.
And that's often been the case, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the few teams that's been, not just in the Big Ten, but nationally, that's been an exception to that is Michigan State.
Right.
You know, we talked about during the tournament, Tom Izzo, I believe, is the all-time leader now in wins as a lower seed in the NCAA tournament. In history, but that's not been typically the Big Ten follows form, you know.
Yeah,
what the expectations are. I would say, you know, it was a weird year in the conference because it's easy to say that the conference was down a bit because you really only had one team that was considered a legitimate contender. Illinois had a nice year. It got to the Elite Eight, so certainly they had a chance to be a Final Four team by that measure. But I don't ever believe they were a team that was, at best, they were on the fringe of teams that were considered to be likely Final Four participants,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So the bit, and then after that, you know, it's a steep drop from there. Yeah. So we didn't have, as we have had in many other seasons, where you've got, you know, three teams, four teams that are considered to have a real shot. So by that measure, it was down. As you mentioned, conference was a little shy of where it's been in terms of the number of tournament bids that it received. So in that sense, you could say it. But I would also say this on the flip side. The depth of the conference, in other words, who finished 13th?
Rutgers.
I don't even recall. Rutgers.
And they had Maryland. Okay. So, yeah.
Okay. So Rutgers and Maryland. Those two teams, I would argue, were better than we typically see from a 12th or 13th place finisher in the Big Ten. And I think you could extrapolate from there and go, I mean, we talked about it for much of the season. How many teams were bunched between, like, you know, 8 and 11 conference wins? A lot. The majority of the league was in that band. So you didn't have that normal kind of separation. Like, if we go back to last year, you know, even the basement team, I don't want to give Michigan any more credit than they merit, which isn't very much. But was Michigan a better last place team than Minnesota was a year ago? Well, I would argue yes, they were. You know, so it's a funny thing. The Big Ten, and that doesn't win you anything. It means that what you've got is you've got a lot of teams in that, you know, hey, they're decent on a given day. They could hang with anybody kind of band, more so than we usually see. But the bad side of it was you also didn't have teams with that really high ceiling either.
Yeah.
Other than Purdue and arguably.
Yeah, and I almost think, you know, it, certainly after the non-conference portion of the season was done and we got into league play, the Big Ten was viewed as not very good compared to other leagues. And it's hard to sort of evaluate everything based on the NCAA tournament because teams have changed, you know, and there's just random luck that sort of, you know, the one time sort of opportunity to play people. But it's certainly my impression was not that the Big 12 was overwhelmingly powerful this year. I mean, that certainly didn't look very good in the NCAA tournament. That was the runaway sort of view of everyone, that the top league was the Big 12. And it just didn't feel like it to me. I mean, I think they probably were better. They had more good teams than the Big Ten did.
Yes.
But yes. I don't think they were, like, you know, amazing.
you're right about, you know, it's a funny thing. I agree with you that it's hard to extrapolate too much from the NCAA tournament. That's like, I find it laughable, these people who want to, well, look at the way the three teams that got in from the Big East fared, especially UConn, and that somehow means that Seton Hall and St. John's should have gotten bids. No, it doesn't.
Right.
It means UConn was a great team. That's all it means, you know, and it means the other, Marquette and Creighton. I'm drawing a blank on who Creighton had nice runs too. That's all it means. It doesn't mean anything particularly for those other teams who finished beneath them in the Big East. But I agree it's difficult to extrapolate too much from NCAA tournament performance in terms of what it means about the quality of a league, because it's a one and done format, you know, weird things happen, blah, blah, blah. Does one game's outcome outweigh 30 some games? Well, it probably shouldn't, right? Math tells us that. But then again, this is the system we have. And so you can argue that it shouldn't be the way it is, but it is. You know, the NCAA tournament is the ultimate arbiter, just as playoffs are in professional sports. Now, you know, in all the sports except pro football, you at least have the argument there of saying, well, but you got to win a series. You got to win multiple games to progress.
Yeah.
And so that tends to have an effect in terms of sorting out, you know, who's truly better. And most of the time, I think that that ends up being the case. But look, this is how it is. So they're interesting debates, I suppose, from people. But I think that for the most part, when you and I are talking about this, we're trying to look at the broad picture of things. And what I could say is that the Big Ten was, in my view, probably the third best league in America. I would put the Big 12 and maybe the Big East ahead of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's be honest, the Big Ten got more teams in than the Big East, but there wasn't a lot of difference between the last, say, three Big Ten teams that got in and, say, the first three Big East teams that got left out.
Sure, yeah.
You know, there wasn't. If those teams played each other, the spread on a neutral floor, the spreads would be pretty tight.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it was an okay year in the Big Ten. Not an all-time great one, not a terrible one. I've seen worse in my life. I have seen many that were better. But it was, you know, that's kind of what it was. It was a year where you had one legitimate contender that actually played to their potential. And then pretty much everybody else kind of did, as you said, what they would have been expected to do.
Yeah. So let's just go through the teams. We'll just start from the top and work our way to the bottom, which starts off with Purdue. They finished 17-3 in the conference. They're 34-5 overall. They were a number one seed, the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. They ended up making the term final and lost to Connecticut, who I think is one of the best teams I've seen in quite some time in college basketball. I mean, I think they were really a really good team. So I don't think there's any reason to sort of bag on Purdue for losing that team, because that was a really good team they lost to. I thought they were certainly it looked like they were almost going to follow Virginia's script, where they lose to a 16 seed as a one seed, and then the next year go and win the NCAA tournament, because they were just rolling through the NCAA tournament until they hit Connecticut and then lost. And I think, you know, they got exposed in the last final game, only in the sense that Connecticut had someone who could counter Zach Edey, at least enough so that it would allow, not force double teams and leave wide open shooters for Purdue. And that was sort of the difference in the game, I felt, as far as the matchup for Purdue.
Well, let's talk about that final first. I had this discussion after the game with, I may have mentioned on here before, I have a brother-in-law who's he played college basketball at the D3 level, but he's a huge UConn fan.
My condolences.
Grew up in Connecticut. We were talking about it, and I said, you know, it was really interesting to me about that game, and it kind of riffs off what you were just saying. Michigan State fans know that over the years, not this year, because it had gotten to the point that you just couldn't do it, but in a lot of years where Purdue's had a very good, very, very large center, the way Tom Izzo has combated that is to play that guy essentially one-on-one in the post, not provide much help, let that guy go off, but concentrate on completely taking away threes. And that is a formula that he has been able to use to win games against Purdue in the past. Multiple times he's done that against Matt Painter teams.
Yeah.
The difference here, but when he's done that, those have typically been tight games. Like Michigan State's been able to win, but, you know, it's Miles Bridges' jumper at the buzzer.
Yeah, right.
Tyson Walker getting Trevion Williams one-on-one and hitting a jumper over him. You know, it's been tight margins. Mm-hmm. The difference here was the reason UConn was able to win easily is they had in their big kid somebody who physically – I mean, Edey still had huge numbers, but he wasn't, even with that, he wasn't as efficient as we've seen him be.
Right.
And that was the difference. They had a guy who could one-on-one make Edey work, and it took something out of him. I also thought, you know, we've mentioned this, I think, or at least touched on it in the past, that one area Edey's made huge growth over his career is his stamina.
Yeah.
You know, he was playing crazy minutes this year, and never, in my recollection, I don't ever remember him looking like he was out of gas late in the second half of games. If he was, it was rare. Well, he looked that way in this game, I thought. It's because UConn really made him work. And the added benefit of that is it meant that their other guys could stay at home. Purdue ended up only attempting 7 threes in that game.
Yeah. That was huge.
Yeah, that was huge. That the Michigan State has done that part in the past. They've taken away the three, but they've never been able to make that center who's going one-on-one, you know, less than super efficient. You know, their approach has been, we're going to take that trade-off. We know we're going to give up a bunch of twos, but we'll live with that if we can take away the threes. UConn said, why not both? And yeah. And very few, very, 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 very few teams have the personnel to even think about approaching it that way. They did, and that was the difference. That's why they won by double digits. But going back to Purdue, you're right in that it exposed the issue that I've been talking about all season, which is where are their guards going to be when they're facing real ball pressure and when they're not getting wide open looks, you know, from Edie, or as a result of Edie's gravitational pull, you know, and we saw they really struggled. They really struggled with the ball pressure. I didn't think Smith had a period in the first half where he played very well, and then he went in the tank after that.
Yeah.
They just knocked him out. Lawyer had a terrible game. That said, is it fair to say, well, I'm not doing a victory lap because they got to the final.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they won the Big Ten. They got to the final. I think for the most part, you would say those guards passed the test.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't pass the ultimate test. Now, I do happen to think that Purdue, and look, this isn't a knock on them. This is how it goes. Purdue was fortunate to draw matchups that I don't think were particularly designed to test their weaknesses. They weren't facing teams that were capable of playing the way I think you need to play if you're going to beat Purdue. You know, you need to be able to do those things we just talked about, and they didn't really face that until UConn. But, you know, that's not Purdue's fault. You play the games that they put in front of you.
Right.
So hats off to them. You know, Matt Painter, you now have gotten that monkey is off his back.
Mm-hmm.
He did something. He's now done something his predecessor, Gene Katie, for as fantastic a career as he had, never was able to do, which is get to a Final Four. And then he did it one better and got to a title game. So he's done enough now that I think you can take that monkey off his back to and the program's back to a large extent. You know,
I think that was
really important for him. I think it was really important for Purdue basketball. They didn't get it done, and that's going to be disappointing. And you know, what it brought to my mind as I was watching the final minutes of that game was, the speech that Dan Campbell reportedly told his Detroit Lions team this year after losing the NFC Championship game, where he said, you know, look, this may have been our only shot. We may never get back here again. And he wasn't saying, he was saying that, as I understand it, as motivation.
Yeah, right.
You know, to say, don't let that happen.
Don't assume you're
going to
be back. Yeah, right.
But at the same time, right, don't assume that it just gets handed to you. It's extremely difficult to get there. Look, is Matt Painter ever going to coach a player like Zach Edey again? He's going to try because he's going to continue to recruit 7'9" behemoths, but I think it's probably unlikely.
Yeah.
You know, a 2-time National Player of the Year, a guy who's that big of a freak physically and who somehow gets the benefit of the whistle the way that he did, I think it's very unlikely that happens again. That said, Matt Painter's had very good basketball teams before this. So I suspect he will continue to have very good basketball teams, but it's a hard thing. This is why I think It's why we talk so much and why Michigan State people should take so much pride in what Tom Izzo has done, getting to the Final Four 8 times. That is insane. That doesn't happen. You know, it just doesn't.
Yeah.
And so is Matt Painter ever going to have another shot or a better shot than the one he had this year? Maybe yes, maybe no. I mean, the one thing you could say in his defense in that has been the case with a lot of Big Ten teams. You know, you were talking about the long period of time it's been since the Big Ten won a national championship. Well, Big Ten's had a bunch of teams in Final Fours, and it's had a bunch of teams in national title games.
Yep.
With rare exception, those teams have had the misfortune of getting there in years where there was a truly great opponent. Like, let's put it this way. If Purdue had gotten through last year.
Yeah, they win. Yeah.
Yeah, they're the best team. They weren't the best team this year. UConn was, and you mentioned, and it's hard to argue with the notion that they've been as impressive as anybody. I would say, at a minimum, 2012 Kentucky, maybe 2009 Carolina. I have a bit of a block with them because I look at their team and I think, is there even one surefire NBA starter on that team? I don't know that there is. Maybe Castle, maybe Clayton, but they're not guarantees in my view. But the way they played, they were incredibly impressive. So you would say Purdue had some misfortune, right, in getting through that year. Michigan State, 0-9 against Carolina, definitely. Wisconsin against Duke in 15. That Wisconsin team wins the title, in my opinion, 9 out of 10 years.
Yeah, right.
They just didn't that year. They had some misfortune in who they drew. Really, the Ohio State against Florida in whatever it was, 07. You know, we can go on and on and on. No, let's put it this way. No Big Ten team ever drew San Diego State in a national title game.
Right.
You know, it just hasn't worked out that way during this period. So that's part of what's gone on with the Big Ten is there's just been a lot of bad luck. No, that's, you know, you could say that's an excuse. And, well, why isn't the Big Ten team the best team? Okay. You know, but I do think it's worth mentioning. Interestingly, I think the only team that I can think of that really wasn't running into that was when Michigan lost to Louisville in 13. Michigan, I don't think that Louisville team was a great opponent.
Yeah.
They're a good team. They weren't great. That's really the only one I can think of where you'd say, well, the Big Ten team really had a good shot. Otherwise, they run into a lot of tough opponents.
Well, it turns out the Final Four is not on the schedule. And you can't take them for granted.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, overall, Purdue has to be very happy with their season. It was a good year for them.
Yeah.
And the question is going to be, what are they next year? And that's going to be, and that's, you know, as soon as the season's over, boom, the next question is, you know, what are you going to do next year? And
that's right.
How are you going to replace it?
That's right.
So that'll be.
Well, one thing that I think is probably very likely is I don't think they're going to lose a lot of guys. When I look at that team, Matt Painter's done kind of like Tom Izzo. He's done a good job at retaining, keeping his roster intact. He's not losing a lot of guys to the portal. I could see Caleb First leaving. I don't know that, but just kind of what his expectations were versus what his role has been. I could see that, but who knows?
Yeah.
Other than that, though, I expect him to bring a lot of those guys back. And they've continued to recruit solidly, and I think they're going to be a good team next year. That's a safe assumption. Probably not what they've been, you know, the last 3 years, really.
Yeah.
They've had an incredible 3-year run, and I don't think it's likely they stay quite at that level, but I would expect them to be good.
Yeah. Well, it's fair to assume Fletcher Lawyer will still be back since he probably would fall down trying to go to get entering the transfer portal. He would not be able to get off the floor, so...
Yeah, and they're going to bring those guys back, and now, you know, it's going to shift where they're going to be the guys
players.
That they're looking to as the, and so it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
All right, so then moving on down to Illinois, they finished 14-6 in the Big Ten, so quite a bit of ways back from Purdue. because Purdue just rolled through the season. They were in 29-9 overall, and they finished in the Elite Eight, where they lost to that same UConn team. And they had they were a very surprising team. They were a team that looked very flawed from its design, yet they had enough great individual players and pieces that were able to make it work. Ty Rogers did a good enough job as a point guard-ish player. And Terrence Shannon came back from his suspension with the legal issues that he had in Kansas. And that really was, I think, turned the season around. Yeah. I know they were still winning, but certainly him coming back was what gave them the firepower to go as far as they did. And so good job by Brad Underwood. I know his name's been sort of bandied about as a possible replacement for Calipari in Kentucky as we're recording this. I don't think that will happen, but I think anything's possible with the way the world is now.
Just on that real quick, the speculation is very heavy that it'll be Scott Drew from Baylor.
Yeah.
If for some reason Scott Drew turned it down, the rest of their A-list, they're not getting Nate Oates. They're not getting Billy Donovan to come out of retirement.
Jay Wright,
They're not getting Jay Wright to come out of retirement. They're not going to get Danny Hurley. If it gets past Scott Drew, then I think could get to that next level where Underwood would be a viable name. But, Illinois had this happen before. They had Bill Self, and they had every right to think they were going to have Bill Self for a long time, and then Kansas comes along. It's those handful. Illinois wouldn't lose its head coach to many schools, but Kansas and Kentucky are two of them.
Yeah, right.
But looking at this season, I've been a big critic of Brad Underwood, and I think justifiably so, but I got to take my hat off to him for this season. First of all, like Painter, he finally had that March breakthrough. They come up a game short of the Final Four, but for that program, getting to an Elite Eight is something.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. And so that's a breakthrough for him personally and for the program. To have the season they had with the roster they had, I think, was pretty remarkable. Because I thought that was going to be the problem coming in, that there wasn't a real point guard on that team. How do you win in modern basketball without a real point guard? And he was talking a lot during the offseason about positionless basketball. And, I kind of laughed at that. Like, all right, that sounds good. But unless you got Draymond Green out there or Irvin Johnson, be careful. But they really did. What they did, there were a few things that played in their favor. One is that, and we talked about this in the preseason, I knew they were going to run a lot of offense through Coleman Hawkins because he'd shown that he was a good passer. He has a good face-up dribble game for a kid 6'10". So I figured they would run stuff through him, but he had been very inconsistent in his first 3 years. And so there were no guarantees that he was going to figure it out. Well, he did figure it out. We really didn't know a lot about Marcus Domask, except that he had played well at Southern Illinois. You weren't sure how that was going to translate.
Right.
It translated incredibly well. That guy was a huge key because they were also able to use him as a playmaker. You mentioned Ty Rogers, point guard. He really wasn't. I mean, they would use him to bring the ball up, but he wasn't the guy. It was the first two guys I mentioned were really the keys. And then Terrence Shannon, obviously, him coming back, there's no question. That was the key to them being able to make the run that they did. He had a tremendous NCAA tournament until they ran into UConn. His first three games, he was remarkable. If he had stayed on ice the whole season with that criminal charge, I don't think they would have done that. They were winning without him, you're right, but I suspect that would have caught up to them at some point or another. But hats off to Brad Underwood for looking at what he had and saying, this is not ideal, but we've got guys who have some strengths and we're going to play to them. And what they did is they really played very much an NBA style of basketball, by which I mean very generally they hunted mismatches. And they had guys who were capable of being mismatch players, by which I mean they were a very big team. It wasn't like they were trotting out 3 7-footers, but they were big at most positions on the floor.
Yeah.
And that enabled them to work those mismatches. They also were fortunate that they had, even though they didn't have a point guard, they had a pretty good passing team. They played unselfishly. And they had a lot of guys who were capable of winning one-on-one battles. If they could get you isolated, they were going to be able to take advantage of that with a lot of frequency because they had guys like Shannon, like Ty Rogers, like Coleman Hawkins even, who were very good downhill players, you know, could often take the guy guarding them to the rim. So credit to Underwood for figuring that out. And I think as much as any coach in America, other than maybe Dan Hurley, he got about as much out of his team as there was to get, in my opinion.
I think, he maximized. He hit their ceiling.
Yeah. I don't think there was a lot, you know, like I said, they didn't get to a Final Four. Well, I don't think that's a failure because I think they were a fringe Final Four team at best anyway. So him getting them to an Elite Eight, getting them to, I believe they finished second in the league. I don't think there was much more ceiling to go with that.
Yeah.
Credit to him. They never quite figured it out defensively, but their offense was so good that it was enough to get them to that level.
Well, we'd be remiss not to mention our great sponsors, our new sponsor, Christian Brothers Automotive. Humac can help maximize what you get out of your car. Probably one of the big things, they're actually going to sponsor the question of the show. So if you have a question, please send it in at eric@tffinots.com. But one of the things that people often have problems with is when you go buy a used car, or I guess what's the term now? It's not used car. It's a, I can't even think what it's called.
Pre-owned vehicle.
That's a euphemism, right? We don't want to say used. So when you buy the pre-owned car, either from a dealer or a private party, one of the risks, of course, is that you don't really have a history. You might have a Carfax or something like that, but you really don't know how the car is operating. And so one of the great things that is super, if you have a chance, is go into Christian Brothers, and for, I don't think it's like $100 or something, that they will inspect that car. So make sure that it's running well. My foster son had a car that he bought off Facebook Marketplace, and the transmission blew in, I think 1 week, because it was a bad car. And the other car he bought at a used car lot, same problem. It wasn't transmission, but it was something that could have been discovered had someone inspected the car. So, you know, I know it's a couple bucks to do that, but it is something that you will not regret if you're going to buy a pre-owned car. So head on over to Christian Brothers Automotive. They're located in the Metro Grand Rapids area. They also have a bunch of national brands, or I should say franchises around. It's a great place. So make sure you think about that when you're looking for a car. You can find information on locations on our support page at thefinalfoursonschedule.com/support. So moving down, now we kind of drop off a cliff and go into sort of the upper average for the Big Ten. We'll start in Nebraska. They're 12-8 in the Big Ten, 23-11 overall. Again, made the NCAA tournament for second straight year. This time they lost, and so they lost in the first round. They were a very interesting team. They're 18-1 at home and 3-8 on the road. So there's a huge dichotomy. If you got them outside of Lincoln, they were not nearly as good. And they had a really good season too. I think they brought in Rink Mast, right?
Yep.
And he was a good addition for the team. I thought also Tominaga was Tominaga this season. I don't think he was a whole lot better than he was the previous year. But Wiltshire was very good, and they had some good parts that made him a dangerous team. And so another good year from Hoiberg, and he finally sort of...
Really the first one. I mean, they were...
Yeah, that's
they
true.
They were close to 500, I believe, last season in the league, but they were nowhere near an NCAA tournament team. So to have his first breakthrough, another guy he added in the portal, Bryce Williams from Charlotte, I believe, was really a big addition for them. He got it right. You know, he's been a guy that's been active in the portal every year.
Yeah.
And, you know, last year you started was the first time that you could say, well, those additions really worked out. Like, they added some guys that made that team more competitive, but they still weren't good enough. This year, they were good enough. They had Juwan Gary took a big step forward. They had, I'm drawing a blank on his name, Astok.
Ulwick.
The kid they got from New Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a nice addition. I mean, they had a lot of pieces. They weren't a team that scared you in terms of what they looked like on paper or even if you watched them play. But the biggest difference was they were actually a solid defensive team this year for the first time under Fred Hoiberg. He's always been a guy with a reputation as an offensive coach. His offenses had not been as good as they were at Iowa State, but his defenses were really bad. Yeah. So that was a tough combination. This year, the offense was decent. Wasn't great, but it was solid. But the defense was actually very good. And look, I think that it's going to be interesting to see where it goes from here. I think that, you know, when you're living in the portal, it's really hard to project stability year to year to year, right? This is one of the problems because just because you got it right, look at Brad Underwood. Brad Underwood got it right in the portal this year. Like, everybody he added played a role and was significant.
Yep.
But you need only go back to the year prior to see where it did not work, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the challenge for Fred Hoiberg. Now, it looks like he's going to have a lot of guys back, so that's a positive. You know, we've got one more year of this extra COVID year thing, and it looks like he's going to have that. That's a big positive for them. You know, you like what they did. Certainly, this season is nothing but a positive by Nebraska standards. I mean, this is a program that still has never won an NCAA tournament game in its entire history.
It's amazing.
So,
like nine tries.
Well, they did. Yeah. And you're right. You would think the law of averages, they'd win one, but it hasn't happened yet. But other than that, you've got to look at the season as a complete positive because we viewed them in the preseason, and I believe our conclusion was, yeah, if everything breaks right, they got a chance to maybe push for a bid. But we had them on the outside looking in, and instead they were the third best team in the league.
Yeah. Yeah.
So nobody saw that coming.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. And that was almost more a reflection of the other teams just not being quite up to snuff, I feel, than Nebraska being, a whole lot better.
Michigan State, Ohio State, and Maryland all being significantly worse than was anticipated had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Well, and tied with them for third was Northwestern at 12-8 as well in the league. They're 22-12 overall. They were, again, very similar to Nebraska, 15-2 at home, 4-7 on the road. They won their first round game in the NCAA tournament, so they're really good when they get to the NCAA tournament. they at least win a game. This is the one actually I was thinking of Nebraska, but Northwestern would now back-to-back NCAA tournament first round wins. And so Chris Collins has got something going. I mean, you could argue it might be Boo Booey related, and we'll see if he can sustain things, because that's always the difficulty there. But a very successful year for Northwestern. It looked good right from the start when they beat Purdue at home, just like they did the year prior. And you could argue they had a chance to take him out in West Lafayette outside of, 47 fouls called on their team.
They did.
Where Collins got ejected. So anyway,
they deserved to win that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. They deserved to win that game. Yeah. Another first in Northwestern history to have consecutive NCAA tournament bids. Never been done. This is only the third time in the program's history they've made it.
Yeah.
So obviously, there weren't a lot of opportunities for that. But that's another breakthrough for Chris Collins. You know, there had been, and something we talked about, like, might this be the year that Chris Collins decides, hey, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I've done about as much as I can do here. I'm going to move on. Reportedly, there was some interest from Michigan in their vacancy, and he ruled himself out.
Yeah.
So the way I look at him now, after all of that, is that I have to conclude he's more or less a lifer. I mean, stranger things have happened.
Right, barring a Duke opening up or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That I would guess that he's kind of, this is going to be it. And that's great for him, great for the school. He's taken the program, obviously, to heights it had never reached before. And while you don't know what next year is going to look like, I think that, yeah, I think that you could start to look at him kind of in a similar way to the way that Pat Fitzgerald had their football program functioning, where they could have a down year, and they would have down years where they were, you know, 1-7 in the league or something.
Yeah.
But periodically, you knew periodically when he had a veteran team, the right kind of players in there, he would have a group that was capable of having some success. And I think that's possibly where Chris Collins is going to have this basketball program. Boo Booey was obviously massive for them. Langborn as well, the portal addition from Princeton, was a huge addition for them. Critical, yeah. I would say, in keeping them where they were. They're going to be an interesting team next year. They've already got Ty Berry and Matt Nicholson are coming back for their COVID years. So those two guys are back. And Ty Berry getting hurt late in the year really did ding them a little bit. They don't, that, who knows what would have happened.
Yeah.
Had he been healthy. They're losing Bowie. They're losing Langborn. Those are two big losses. It'll be interesting to see if and when they add somebody in the portal in the backcourt. That'll probably have a lot to do with their prospects for next season. But yeah, for this year, again, similarly to what we said about Brad Underwood, to me, it feels like Chris Collins got about as much out of that group as there was to get. Pretty close.
Yeah. Especially with the injuries, he really got, I think we kind of expected more of a drop off, and they managed to sort of limp across the line and even get an NCAA tournament win.
Absolutely. And they were, I mean, they were playing in the tournament without Berry and without Nicholson. That was big. And there was also a period where they were without Langborn down the stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, he came back in the end, but yeah, he did not have an easy ride, and yet they were able to have a pretty damn good season.
Well, let's talk to you about a team that had a good season, but then didn't have a very good season, and that's the Wisconsin Badgers. They were riding high early in the season. They were, what, I think, 8-1 in the Big Ten, and then just crashed. They finished 11-9 in the Big Ten, 22-14 overall. They lost in, they played well in the Big Ten tournament, made it to the title game, and they lost to Illinois, didn't they? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, they lost to Illinois, so they made it to semifinals or something, but and then they lost in the first round, an upset, as in typical Badger style in the NCAA tournament. And they were, I don't know how to describe their season, except that one of two seasons, and the good part and then the bad part. And they were pretty bad and pedestrian in the second part of the season. And it's hard to know which was a real Wisconsin team, or probably somewhere in between. But AJ Storr was carrying them for quite a while, and when he would not have a good game, they were in really big trouble.
Yeah, and I think that it ended up being pretty close to the right level for what that team was.
Mm-hmm.
Storr in that first half was such a monster that it served to elevate the whole. And when it's not that he came crashing back to earth, but he wasn't what he was. There were many more inefficient games in the second half of the season. And then, you know, it's the same problem that you end up with frequently with Wisconsin, certainly in the Greg Gard era, is when that happens. It was the same thing with Davis, right? When he was there, when the one kind of more transcendent player you got isn't on, who can you turn to?
Yeah.
And they don't have a lot of other options who have that kind of ability. They've got guys who can play well and play effectively within their system, but they don't have guys that can just kind of take a game on their individual backs and go win it. Not a bad team by any means. I mean, there were, you know, Kroll, I think, improved some this year. Tyler Wall was Tyler Wall. Hepburn is capable of having his moments. Klezmet really improved.
Yeah, he was much better.
But they also had guys like Asijan just completely crashed after a very good freshman season. Injuries and then just ineffectiveness really limited him. He wasn't nearly the player I think they thought he would be coming into the year, and he's in the portal. So I think you could argue, you know, maybe a game or two better would have been about right for them, but they kind of ended up being more or less what I thought they were going to be. Good team, long way from a great one.
Yep. And so that brings us to another next sponsor, you know, the Brothers Jesu Gutters. You know, maybe your gutters are good, but they're not great. They should be great, because if you have bad gutters, it's going to cause all kinds of problems, especially with all the rain coming down. You got to make sure your foundation is dry, and so there's no better team to contact than Brothers Jesu Gutters, whether you're on the east side of the state or the west side of the state. Contact Kurt or Greg and their teams. They will take care of you. They take care of my house, and they can take care of your business. If big jobs, small jobs, just cleaning out the gutters, repairing them, replacing them, whatever you need done, they can take care of it. So contact the Brothers Jesu Gutters. You find their contact information on the support page. Moving down then now to the 500 teams, in the, we'll skip Michigan State, go to Indiana Hoosiers, finished 10-10, 19-14 overall, and they did not make the NCAA tournament. I think they turned down an NIT bid.
They turned down the NIT.
They turned the NIT bid. That's what I thought. And so anyway, so they lost. Their season ended. They were definitely in the running early, or I should say late in the season, Big Ten season, to replace Mike Woodson. And then they won a couple games. They kind of went, got hot a little bit late and got up to 500. And at some point, I don't remember how many games, three or four games left in the season, they just decided to extend Woodson's contract. And so the coaching vacancy that was potential in Indiana disappeared. And so they're just kind of standing pat with who they have and what they've got. And so anyway, I think for Indiana fans, it's got to be infuriating right now to watch Purdue's ascendancy and Purdue's dominance in the state, and from a recruiting standpoint, certainly from a success standpoint. I mean, it's a Purdue state right now, and Indiana has really been an afterthought for quite some time.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's kind of akin to Michigan and Michigan State in football, and it pains me to say this, but if Michigan, even during peak D'Antonio, Michigan was still able to get its share of highly rated in-state guys, right? It is the same, in my opinion, Indiana. Purdue can get good players, but by and large, Indiana is going to be much more competitive than its record vis-a-vis Purdue, which suggests it should be in terms of recruiting.
Yeah.
Because it's just kind of an Indiana, you know, Indiana is the dominant.
Yeah.
You know, historically, it's the dominant program. I will say this. I think there was nobody breathing easier after that national championship game result than Indiana fans, because that still gives them, you know, they would have the historical trump card for a long time anyway, but they don't want Purdue to get even one.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they were very happy about that. I don't understand Indiana's deal on this.
That's been going back years at this point.
But yet again, I don't understand it. I don't know what reason there is to believe that Mike Woodson is suddenly going to have a breakthrough. You know,
because they barely got to 10-10. I mean, they looked really dysfunctional for most of the year.
He'll get talented players. I mean, if you look at their team next year, they're going to lose where to the pros. But I believe the anticipation is that Renault will be back. He's a very good player. Mm-hmm. They added Bryson Tucker, who was a guy that Michigan State was recruiting out of high school this spring. He's not without questions around him, but he is a talented kid. McBaco may be back. So they've got two or three guys that probably have NBA potential. But is there any reason to think that there's going to be a coherent team there? I don't know. The problems this year were familiar ones for Indiana over the last, going back to the Archie Miller era. Their guard play was really suspect, and they really struggled to shoot the deep for a lot of the season. And they had great interior. I mean, Ware and Renault, especially second half of the season, those guys were clicking.
Yeah.
That was a very, very capable twosome inside, but it wasn't enough, you know, because they didn't, they lacked that perimeter game to supplement it. So we'll see. They're active in the portal. We'll see who they add there. You know, Trey Galloway, I know, has indicated he's coming back, so that helps him. Because when he's healthy, he's a pretty good player. But they got a lot to add, and do you really, has Mike Woodson given you any reason to believe that he's going to be able to put the whole together in a way that really works at Indiana? I would argue there's not a lot of reason to believe that. And again, we're not talking about a guy who's in his 40s.
Right. Yeah, he's in the end of his career.
Or even, you know, somebody like Brad Underwood, where, you know, they had those disappointing NCAA tournament finishes, but you could still say, well, okay, but he's getting us to the tournament consistently. He's had some regular season success. Mm-hmm. He's building something. You know, there was no reason for Illinois to say, well, let's just can this and move on. I don't see that at Indiana on any level.
Yeah. Well, let's move to the last sixth place team in that 10-10 clumping, and that's the Iowa Hawkeyes. They finished 19-15 overall. They went 1-1 in the NIT. I can't remember who they lost to. Anyway, they had a season that was looking pretty dire, and then they kind of cranked up right around when they played Michigan State in East Lansing.
Yeah.
I think they beat Wisconsin the game before that. They beat Michigan State, and then they won a couple games in a row, and then they just weren't able to beat enough highly rated teams. They lost a pair to Illinois, which I think just kind of finished them off, any chance they had of sneaking into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And it was a kind of about what we suspected, that they were going to be sort of on the fringe. Maybe they get in, maybe they don't.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of the Big Ten, and that's exactly where they landed. And it was a typical Iowa team. And the only thing I think you can say for Iowa is that they have some hope that they're going to be a little bit better next year, that their players, Sanford, is suspect he'll be pretty good next year. Owen Freeman will be better too next year. So they have reason to be optimistic that next year they'll be better, but I don't know that they're going to be, certainly they don't seem, they've been dominant that's coming in, you know?
Yeah, but on the other hand, you know, they've lost Tony Perkins, who's in the portal. They lost the coach's son.
Yeah, McCaffrey.
Which is really remarkable. Really remarkable. And supposedly the story there is, well, they think he can go get paid, which, you know, is there really a clamoring for him? Maybe there is. I mean, not that he can't play, but, you know, and it buttresses what I had heard. Supposedly the youngest McCaffrey, who's like either a sophomore or a junior in high school,
yeah,
but the suspicion is he's the best of the three brothers. But there's also been talk that he was not going to play at Iowa.
Right.
And this happening makes me think, well, that might be actually be real, which is kind of strange. You just expect coaches' kids to play for them, but maybe not. Yeah, you're right. It ended up being sort of the year we expected. Figured maybe if things broke the right way, they'd have a chance to be a tournament team, but it was going to be tough. They were going to be on the fringes of it, and that's exactly where they landed. I think it was a typical Iowa season in that the offense was pretty good, maybe not quite as good as some of their recent versions have been. And I think that's in large part down to the fact that, unlike some of the recent teams, I mean, this was the first team in like 4 years where they didn't have a, you know, Big Ten Player of the Year candidate.
Right, right.
On their, you know, they had,
not
they
even
had
close,
Garza,
yeah,
and then both of the Murray brothers. And they didn't have anybody on that level this year. They had some good players. You mentioned Sanford. Perkins had some good numbers. Freeman was good. The transfer big kid, Ben, I'm forgetting his name.
Agondale.
The others. Right? No. The transfer, the portal guy they brought in. Yeah, they had a portal
you
center.
Think the season anyway was like 8 months ago. I can't remember anyone's name.
Right.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I get
From the Missouri Valley. He was, anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe he was from Valpo. I'm sorry. But they had, they had some good players, not a great one. And then the defense was really bad, even by McCaffrey standards.
Cricky.
I think it was
the name.
Third...
Cricky.
Cricky. I think this was the third worst defensive team he's had at Iowa, which says a lot because he's had some bad ones. and that was enough. You know, that the offense with that team, the offense couldn't have been just good. It needed to be great, and it wasn't great. They didn't shoot the three very well. You know,
which is what they needed
to
do.
Some things we normally see out of Iowa that weren't quite there, and so the offense just wasn't quite good enough to carry them over the line.
And fortunately for the men's team, is the women's team was amazing. They made the national championship game. Caitlin Clark, of course, a phenom. So they were overshadowed, which is probably a good thing for the season. So no one paid much attention to the men's team. So it'll be interesting next year where there's a little bit more focus on the men's team, because I'm sure the women's team is not going to be nearly as good. So
yeah, it's interesting, just real quick on Iowa. An interesting thought, because I actually saw something, and it hasn't come to anything. I don't think it will, but that there was a suggestion somewhere that, Fran might be looking to move. And obviously that hasn't happened. I don't think it's going to. But you wonder, he's been there a long time now. I mean, he's one of the longest tenured coaches in the Big Ten. I'm trying to think.
Probably behind Painter and Izzo.
Yeah, right there. He's probably right there with Painter. He's had I would say, a good tenure. Not a great one, but a good one.
Yep.
But you do wonder if, and I don't know whether there's any feeling along those lines institutionally at Iowa, that maybe the program would benefit from a change. I don't know where he's at.
I don't think so.
But it's that they just are sort of stuck in this spot where they can aspire to be a tournament team, but they just don't ever really get to the point that they can be, more than that.
Yeah. It's a tough place to be for Iowa in general, just because, although it has, I don't remember where we ranked them as far as traditions, but it's not a terrible tradition for basketball.
Middle of the pack.
Yeah, kind of middle of the pack. But they don't have any natural talent in the state generally. And so it's hard.
Yes.
And it's hard to get people there because they're not going to have huge NIL support in today's, portal atmosphere and environment. So anyway, I think it's just a little bit more challenging to be successful there. And the way things have changed have not made it any easier for Iowa, I don't think. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's any push right now to get rid of him, but I think, another year or two like this, and I think he'd be fired. But I think he's got a couple years grace, which is maybe about most anybody ever has.
Oh, yeah. I'm not suggesting that they'd be firing him, but more along the lines of, might you be encouraging him? Because Fran's not a super young guy anymore either.
And where's he going to go?
Right. Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not going to make even a lateral move, I don't think. I suppose you could take over like a Washington State or something like that, but you're not going to move to a much better school. And, certainly in it's his position. He's not going to go to like a Missouri Valley or anything like that. So,
right.
All right, so let's talk about we'll get all the three-way tie for eighth place, which begins with Ohio State, the Buckeyes, 9-11 this year, 22-14 overall. Notably, they fired their coach, Chris Holtmann, with, eight games left and something like that in the season.
Yeah.
And then they started winning because I think they were 3-10 or something when they fired him and finished the season winning most of those games.
Yep.
Had decent run. And so, Diebler, who took over for him as the interim coach, they ended up hiring on, which is another little bit of surprise.
And shocking.
So they're going to run with him, and they must have liked his interview, and they must have obviously liked what he'd done and success. And they looked much better under him than they did under Holtmann on sort of like every way. Whether that was a honeymoon sort of period thing with the new interim coach, I don't know. But anyway, Yeah, so that coaching vacancy, we thought, really lasted about like 2 days. Then he was on.
It was first of all, let's just real quickly talk about the season. So for the second year in a row, Ohio State gets off to a terrible start and then closes with a burst, just enough to give you enthusiasm about the future, right?
Yeah, right.
It's different in nature, though, this year, because, as you say, it was an interim coach, Jake Diebler, who had been on Holtman's staff. His brother played at Ohio State, was part of some of those great Thad Matta teams. And they end up giving him the job, which was a shocker. I think people, rightly so, believe that was a coveted position. And it came early because they made the move, as you say, with several games left. So it came early in the season, relatively speaking, for a coaching change. Mm-hmm. And people like Sean Miller were mentioned prominently with it. It has, I think, credibly come out that, you know, word is John Calipari reached out to them and indicated that he would be interested in the job. There were others that were interested. There was a place that some of these other guys that were moving in this cycle, like DeVries at Drake, there were certainly a bunch of names.
Yeah, Dusty May was there too.
Considered Dusty May, yeah. Absolutely. And word is Dusty May would have taken that job if it had been offered. But they end up going with Diebler. And, you know, I could see it. He had a great run to end the season. The idea, I'm sure, was that he's also going to be able to hold a lot of a talented group together. Now, what's interesting is they've lost three guys to the portal. Yeah. They lost Zed Key, which, you know.
Yeah, whatever.
Not a huge. But they also lost Roddy Gale, who was a starting two guard, and Scotty Middleton, who they was their highest rated recruit last year. And although he did have a gangbusters freshman season, that certainly showed potential. So it's not as if Diebler held everybody together. He did add a good player in Michi Johnson, who started at Ohio State, then transferred to South Carolina. Now he's back after a good season at South Carolina, so he will help offset the loss of Gale. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's a gamble. I mean, because Ohio State very clearly could have won the press conference. They could have gotten a biggish name guy and maybe a real big name guy if the Calipari thing is true.
Right.
You know, they opted to go with Diebler, who's certainly a cheaper solution, but also one who provided some continuity for whatever that's worth. I'm not sure how much you should be worried about continuity with a regime that didn't really get it done, but nevertheless, he's from Ohio. He knows he was their key recruiter. He knows the turf. It'll just be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's a slam dunk either way. It could end up looking like a genius move, or it could be like a 3-year trip to purgatory. We don't know.
Stay tuned. As far as talks about 3 years of purgatory, we'll talk about the Minnesota Golden Gophers. They were in purgatory for quite a while under Ben Johnson, and they had the all-transfer team. Then they had the all-transfer team, sort of similar again this year. But this year, I think finally what we expected to happen with Ben Johnson sort of coalesced and happened this year, where they went 9-11 in the Big Ten, 19-15 overall, from being a historically bad team last year, where they were like, what, 200 and something in the net, which is crazy bad for a Big Ten team.
For a Big Ten team.
Yeah, they're 89th this year. And just, you know, as much as we've ragged on Michigan, as bad as they were, they were 133rd in the net, right? And that's pretty bad. So
right.
So anyway, right. So Minnesota finishes 9-11. They were a very competitive team. They were very good. I think much, much better than anyone anticipated, because I think we expected them to be a little better than last year, but certainly not what they were this year. And so a great year for them. And so, you know, is this the kind of foundation that Ben Johnson can now build upon? You can see it and think, you know, this is a team that might be in the NCAA tournament and even next year, you know, if they can sort of get a little bit better, because they're not that far off from being to the point where they can get into the tournament.
The big problem is that, and I think we might have even mentioned this, I hate to think we spoke it into existence, but that would be giving us too much credit, but Pharrell Payne is in the portal, which is a loss. But if they keep everybody else intact, they should still be pretty good and have a lot of reason for optimism heading into the next year. Yeah, credit to Ben Johnson. You know, he's always been able to get that team to play hard and with some toughness. This year he just had a better fit in terms of talent. I think adding Hawkins at the point really made a difference. He got that right. Cam Christie being a upside surprise as a freshman, that was a big addition. Giving them they shot the ball much better from three. Dawson Garcia making good on his potential was a big, they just had a lot of things start clicking. And so I think he's a guy who now, you know, it's funny, after his first year, I thought, wow, this guy really made chicken salad out of chicken, you know what? Yeah. and then the second year, it went the other direction. They were abysmally bad. And now this year, you have a real bounce back. They weren't a tournament quality team, but they weren't that far off either.
Yeah.
And with a lot of that core back, assuming that's what happens, you know, you kind of, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster in terms of how you see his tenure, but you can feel it sort of on the ascendancy for now, at least. I would think Minnesota has to feel pretty good. The biggest thing to me is, and we talked about this in the Big Ten tournament, he's got to find, the missing piece is he's got to find a way to reconnect the basketball program with that fan base and get some excitement built up around Minnesota basketball. Because once upon a time, that was a really tough place to play, and that was an energized fan base for its basketball team. And it's just a lot of years of, even some of the years where, you know, when Tubby was there and Richard Pitino, where they would occasionally have tournament level teams, you never felt like they were on the brink of national relevance, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas they did have that under Jim Dutcher, and they had that under Clem Haskins, where every once in a while they'd have a team that, you know, had the potential to be a Final Four team, was capable of winning a Big Ten title, did win Big Ten titles. They haven't been in that discussion for, we're coming up on 30 years. So, like, 1997 is the last time, I believe, that Minnesota won a Big Ten title. And they have not been close since then. So that's really the next step for Ben Johnson, is can he give that fan base, that community, a reason to really get 2 feet in?
Yeah. Well, and I think we talked about this before too, and my impression is that he won't be able to, just because I think these big city colleges, it's really tough with a bunch of stuff going on to get people excited about college athletics. And now there's just so much more in Minneapolis than there was even back when Minnesota was, you know, pretty good under Clem Haskins. So, I mean, we'll see, but I tend to think not.
It's true. That's true. And that's probably the safe bet, but I would still suggest there's a difference between Minnesota and Northwestern.
Oh, yeah,
or Minnesota and being a college team in New York or Los Angeles or San Francisco. You know, there are differences there. I do think the right guy could get that done. It's just got to be the right guy. I don't know. We've seen enough yet to know where Ben Johnson sits on that right guy, wrong guy continuum.
Yeah. Well, again, stay tuned. So just a reminder too, that if it is now sunny outside, we had the eclipse yesterday, so you can't look directly at the sun, but you want to be able to look through your windows to actually be able to see something. So make sure you have someone take care of those windows and clean them up for you. So if you're in the Grand Rapids area,
you know, can I just stop you for a second? Just, I don't mean to interrupt, but you don't have these segues written out, do you?
No, I don't. You can tell, huh?
Hats off. No, I think they're great. I think I point that out because I think it's remarkable. And I knew you didn't, because frequently you're riffing off something we just discussed, which you can't know in advance exactly where the conversation's going to go. I just wanted to point that out. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, actually it was quite an adventure yesterday, just trying to get some glasses for the eclipse. Cause of course I had no planning with this, and I thought, oh, you know what? It'd be kind of nice. And then I got it done with work early, and my wife sent me across town cause someone was going to get one for me. And I found one pair of glasses. We raced back. So my daughter's looking out the window through them. She's watching the sun as we're racing down the freeway, trying to get to a park. And then of course there's only one pair of glasses. My son got out of school. And so it was all like at 3:11, I think is when the time was. And so we were just kind of trading the glasses. Some guy walks up, he's like, hey, you want some glasses? He gave us like four pairs. So it was great. So I got to see the eclipse, and I don't know about you, I was surprised that it was not quite as dark. I thought it'd be a lot darker, and you were maybe closer to than we are, but 94% sun is, our eclipse is still pretty bright.
It felt more like a cloud pass.
Yeah. Or like the forest fires that we had the summer, yep. Like kind of that haziness.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, yep. That's what it
exactly.
felt like to me.
That's a better comparison. Yeah.
But you know, the point is you want to be able to see properly. You know, you don't have to wear glasses to look out your window, but you need to make sure you have the glasses clean. So again, the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids, they're a fantastic sponsor of the show. Troy's team will take care of you. They can clean your windows of your house. They can clean the windows of your, if you have a business, maybe a high rise, whatever it is, they can take care of it. They can also wash the side of your house too. They do a very good job with their house washing, with their power washing, where they're not doing like super high, where they're scraping the paint off. They make sure they use some nice chemicals like soaps, gentle soaps. And they're up against the house versus standing on the ground 40 feet away just spraying your house. So anyway, they did a good job. Check it out at the support page to get the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids to take care of things. All right, so the last, I think I said eighth place, but it's actually ninth place team, are the Penn State Nittany Lions. They finished 9-11, 16-17 overall, and they are a team that really at the end of the season turned it on. They really started kind of figuring things out. When Michigan State played them in East Lansing, they were a pretty discombobulated and not very good team, and then they really got a lot better. And so we did not expect much from Mike Rhodes with his transfer to out of ECU, and then basically the entire team was replaced this year. But they played really well, and they were a competitive team. I mean, they were not great, but they certainly were a team that you could not overlook. I think they should be very happy with their first year under Rhodes.
I totally agree, and I think that. There's reason if you're one of the eight people that
there
cares
might be a
about
dozen.
Penn State basketball, that you should feel okay about your first impressions of the Mike Rhodes era, because you're right that nobody had them winning nine games in the league. And this is what I was talking about at the outset, that we had these teams that you expected. You know, Penn State, if you would have told me before the season how they win four games in the league, I would have bought that.
Sure, yeah.
They won nine.
Yeah, I don't think we would have thought
that
was possible.
They were competitive, you know, and they didn't have nearly as, you know, the year prior, you know, Shrewsbury's final year there, that was a flawed team, kind of a weird team in roster construction terms, but their strengths were real strengths. Like, that team could shoot it.
Yeah.
And they, you know, there were certain things they did at both ends that were real. This team didn't really have those same kinds of strengths, but boy, they just figured out ways to hang around and be competitive. Now, again, in this portal era, it comes down often to, okay, you figured it out this year. What are you going to do for an encore? Because you got to go back in,
yeah.
And I have honestly not locked into how many guys they've got coming back. I believe Baldwin has another year, which is big. You know, it'll be interesting to see what he does, but you got the sense there's something of an established foundation for how he wants them to play. And, you know, it's, again, I'm always skeptical of these coaches that come in and say, well, we want to run and gun. We want to press for 40 minutes. They can't do that in the Big Ten. But they were able to play a faster kind of game without going complete first-year Brad Underwood with it.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like they were able to do that much. And so it'll be interesting to see if he's able to sustain that. Yeah. You know, that, hey, this is how we're going to play. And he's able to attract guys that can fit into that. And he's able to make good decisions in the portal. You know, there's not much early reason to suspect that high school recruiting is going to take a huge jump forward anytime soon there. But, you know, in this era, it doesn't necessarily have to if you can play the portal correctly. So we'll see. But a good first year, no question about that.
I can't imagine the NIL opportunities at Penn State are much more beyond like the local Jiffy Lube giving you a free oil change. But maybe there's more there for Penn State basketball than I recognize. So.
No, I suspect you're right. And that's why, you know, they're going to have to play it right. They're not going to be able to go out and get the big name guys, you know, or even the guys from the high major ranks for the most, or the mid major ranks for the most part, that are really highly sought after.
Right.
Because those guys are just going to be able to get better opportunities elsewhere. There's no reason to suspect that the money's going to be particularly great at Penn State. But it's enough. There's enough that they should be able to be competitive, you know, and from there, it's just how well does he blend it all?
You know? Absolutely. Yeah. From there, we'll move on to the two-way tie for 12th place between the Maryland Terrapins. They finished 7-13 in the Big Ten, 16-17 overall. For as impressive as their last year was, first year under Kevin Willard, this year was about as equally surprisingly bad and disappointing. And, you know, we had them, I think you had them at the top four or five in the Big Ten. I can't recall exactly.
Oh, yeah.
But
somewhere in there.
They looked not good early, and they looked not good late, and they were occasionally could sort of beat you if you didn't play well. But for the most part, they were a pretty bad team. And so, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that Kevin Willard's on the hot seat, but I don't know how many seasons like that he can afford to have before people start questioning his.
I would agree with that, because let's look at the previous coach, Mark Turgeon, who was from a very early, certainly from the point he got them into the Big Ten. I can't remember how many years he was there when they were still part of the ACC. It wasn't a lot, maybe 2 or 3 years. But from the moment they got in the Big Ten, it seemed every year there was discontent with him at Maryland. And I understand it, because Maryland is a program that has a lot going for it. It's got a great tradition, one national title. They had Final Fours before that under Lefty Driesell.
Yeah.
It's in a region of the country that produces a ton of talent, the DMV. They have resources. The school cares about basketball, although you couldn't tell by the crowds.
Last 2 years, yeah.
At times this year. But they do. They do care about it. And so all of those things come together and suggest that you're right. If there are another couple years like this, I think it's going to be tough to ride it out. I think that last, you know, when they fired Turgeon, I think the expectations in the Maryland fan base were that they'd be able to get a bigger name. And that, you know, sometimes it's a variation on the old Jim Leland line about it's not even so much who you play as when you play them. In coaching, the coaching carousel, it's not so much when you are in the carousel as what coaches are available at that time.
Right.
How does the timing work, you know? And I think Maryland was just unfortunately caught in a year where there weren't a lot of great names available. Like if they had been in the market this year, might that have been a place John Calipari would have looked at?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Right.
I mean, wouldn't shock me. You know, Dusty May. I mean, there would have been DeVries. There would have been a lot of guys that you would have felt good about. Kevin Willard was not a bad name. He'd had some success at Seton Hall, but not, you know, he wasn't a name. We said this at the time he got hired. Like, that's not a name that's going to get those people doing cartwheels.
No.
And they're definitely feeling that way this year. Now, there's some reason to be excited. They landed a McDonald's All-American center in Derek Queen fairly recently. There'll be some guys back. I believe Reese is scheduled to be back. I don't know if they're going to play him at the four, what they're going to do. But, yeah, it was a very, very much a downer year because you looked at them coming in. You had an all-Big Ten caliber point guard in Young. You had a veteran, proven guy as a four-man in Dante Scott and an on-the-rise big in Reese. Plus, you added a pretty good, pretty highly regarded recruiting class. Well, Young was good, but maybe a little more inefficient than you'd like. Reese was good, but he couldn't avoid fouls.
Mm-hmm.
Scott was okay, but maybe not quite as good as you'd hoped. And no support for those three guys. The freshmen, they had the same misfortune that Michigan State and Ohio State had. Highly ranked recruiting class in a year where that wasn't going to guarantee you a lot of production.
Right.
Because the freshman class nationally was not great. So, yeah, I do think it's an important year coming up for Kevin Willard, even though it's only year three. I'm with you.
So then move on to Rutgers. They were also 7-13, 15-17 overall. They lost their last four games of the season. And I don't think we are expecting a whole lot from Rutgers after what they lost, and they hadn't really added a whole lot. Certainly next year, there's plenty of reason to be optimistic about their new players coming in from the recruiting class. This is a team that a program certainly that seemed like it was on the rise in the Big Ten that was going to be pesky and tough, and they just really weren't this year. Like, that was the thing that was most surprising to me, that they just weren't really like that hard-nosed team that they'd been the years before. And that I think was the biggest difference from this year to previous years, that they weren't a hard out. And I think that I don't know if that's a new trend or if that's just like a one-year kind of blip. Well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they were really good defensively. The big difference, I think, in what you're talking about was that they weren't the rebounding program that they've been. And, you know, it was disappointing but not totally unforeseeable that this would happen.
Right.
The offense fell off a cliff. You know, when you lose guys like, you know, look at their backcourt they had last year, right? You had McConnell, you had Mulcahy, and you had Cam Spencer.
Was Cam Spencer good?
And all three of those guys, well, he wasn't as good as he was this year, but he was good. All three of those guys are gone, and, you know, the guys who stepped in for them were not nearly as good. So it's really, you can, and the big man, Omorui, did not take the step up that I think I certainly expected. I thought he would be better than he was.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting, you mentioned next year, with two of the top five high school, maybe two of the top three high school players in America coming in, there's a lot of optimism. But what's interesting is there's also been an exodus of guys who were slated to return. So what they do to fill that roster out around those freshmen is going to be very important. And the problem Rutgers has is this. What happened to them last year, my understanding at least, of why Cam Spencer and Paul Mulcahy left, largely came down to NIL.
Yeah.
And if they can't fix that, that's going to be an ongoing problem, and it will be a problem next year. So there's reason for optimism, but that's very much to be determined. The two kids, Harper and Bailey, everybody loves as a great players. They need more than that.
Yeah.
They need more than that. Right. And they've lost a lot of guys who were on that team this year. Now, you could say, well, addition by subtraction, the team wasn't very good. But, you know, you got to have somebody to play those minutes. And right now, Rutgers is in the need of adding multiple guys in the portal to fill this out. And so it remains to be seen. Look, I'm a huge fan of what Steve Peichel's done. That is the toughest job in the Big Ten. In my mind, even tougher than Penn State, give or take. It's close.
Yeah.
The fact that he had them to, what was it, three straight tournaments?
Yeah.
Could have been another one last year.
They missed the 1 year, yeah.
They missed. That's right.
Last year, they missed. It looked like it was three. Right. Yeah, yeah. But
no, they would have been in the COVID year. They got canceled. Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, right.
And then they had two straight. Probably should have been in it last year. Didn't get the bid. This year they weren't close. He's still, and to have that recruiting class, he's done a remarkable job. But you know, this is where the real test starts to come.
Yep.
He's had good teams, but he's yet to have a team that was, you know, we're talking about regard to Fran McCaffrey, right? Who's the guy? Is this the guy who can take you that next step, which means, well, Final Four contention, Big Ten title contention, those things. That's another level still. I think Steve Peichel's a very, very capable basketball coach, but some of these things, some of the issues that can prevent you from getting to that next level are, to some extent, could be out of his hands.
Yeah.
You know, they're institutional level things.
Yeah, and historical, right? Or which is a,
and that too,
which is part of that institutional.
Too, but,
yeah.
But you can even, but you can blast past the historical stuff to some extent.
Sure.
If you support the program. I mean, we've seen Alabama has no damn history. Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a little, but not much. This is the first Final Four in program history this year. You know, there's no question that they are supporting Nate Oates in a way they never have any previous basketball coach, you know? So you can do that if the institutional will is there. Will it be there at Rutgers? I don't know.
Yeah. And it's my understanding is Rutgers athletic department in general is pretty bankrupt.
Hurting.
They've been losing money for a long time.
So what does that come down to then? What that means, it's the same everywhere. I mean, the athletic department, yes, there's some things, practice facilities, those kinds of things that you need from them. But we're also talking about donor support,
donors, and
which is external to the AD, you know?
Yeah. All right. So then we get to your bottom dweller, the Michigan Wolverines. But before we talk about Michigan, we'll talk about Nudge Printing, which interestingly has about every school possible as far as apparel options, except the University of Michigan. So, you know, if you want to get your Michigan State, not only Michigan State stuff, but Central, Eastern, all the directional schools, a number of other larger or smaller schools in the state like Albion, you can head on over to Nudge Printing. Fantastic stuff. They're great clothes. I mention all the time because I wear it all the time. They're just, and my family wears it working out or whatever, because they're super comfortable t-shirts and sweatshirts and hoodies and stuff. So it's probably a good time to start loading up on that stuff. It's not that long before we'll be heading towards the fall and spring football. So you want to make sure you get that cool stuff for the tailgate. Head on over to Nudge Printing. They've always got new stuff on there. That's at nudgeprinting.com. 20% off if you mention Final Four. Type it in, just one word in the coupon code. And Gabe actually did much better this year. Last year, I kind of gave him a hard time because I think he was almost last. But he was middle of the pack this year. So good for him. And that's with picking Michigan State to win all the games, because he says he does not really follow Michigan State basketball at all. He loves Michigan State, but just not a big basketball guy or sports guy, which is, I think, kind of funny. So let's talk about Michigan. They had a couple things happen this year besides going 3-17 in the Big Ten, 8-24 overall. They lost the last nine games. The worst season they've had since, I think, with the 1960s, so 60-plus years since they've been in last place. And, of course, now the last place in Big Ten is with 14 teams, not just 10. Juwan Howard began the year sick, so he missed the first couple games. Then he came in, and then he had Martinelli. He had a head coach a game at the Plestrom. Then also, while he's an assistant coach, weirdly, on the bench, he gets thrown out of a game. He has an altercation with the strength and conditioning coach, which sounds like it was mostly his fault. That guy got a new job, and I can't remember where he went.
Illinois.
Oh, thank you, Illinois.
Illinois.
But Howard stayed on, and then they just kept getting worse and worse. They had this part-time suspension of Doug McDaniel. And really, I think Juwan Howard's end sort of happened as soon as his kids got on his team, and that was, I don't know if there's less accountability or maybe just he got enough away from the Beeline era that there were no Beeline players left. I don't know. But anyway, his end seemed inevitable, but then we were talking and it seemed like actually he'd survive, and there was every indication that he would, but it sounded like there was at some point that the president of the university said the athletic director, it's either you or Howard. And the athletic director made the wise choice to say, well, not going to be me this time. So Howard's gone. And they landed, I mean, I guess in many respects, the highest at the time, certainly the most coveted coach, the Florida Atlantic coach, Dusty May, who could come with Midwest ties, comes in, and likely he'll bring a number of FAU players with him. And so Michigan has every reason to think things are going to turn around a little bit for next year, but a colossally bad year, and they were, it was fun going to the Chrysler Center, watching him just get pounded by Michigan State. So it couldn't happen to some better people. So anyway, I'll let you go.
Yeah,
go from there.
The worst season in Michigan basketball since, I think you got to go to the early 60s.
Yeah.
Some point.
Way worse than Ellerbe's, right? I mean, those teams are bad, but this
Yeah. But in terms of Ellerbe, I don't believe ever had a last place finish in the league. So that alone, the single digit wins. I mean, I can remember a handful of years in my lifetime. There was the first year that Bill Frieder was in charge, which I think was either 79-80 or 80-81. It was one of those 2 years. They were really bad. The Ellerbe year, Beeline had a rough year or two early, but this blew all of those out of the water. As you said, it was on and on and on.
Yeah, it was like more than losing, right? It was drama and losing.
You could list the freakish. I mean, the altercation with your strength and conditioning coach, the weird suspension of road games only for the point guard. Is he the assistant coach? Is he the head coach? We don't know. All of that. And that doesn't even touch on what's come before this year. So by any objective standard, there was every reason to call time on the Juwan Howard era. I don't think anybody could argue otherwise. But Michigan is fairly loath to fire coaches. And historically, I think they've shown a willingness to go, you know, at least a year longer than most other places would.
Yeah.
And all the word was that the AD did not want to fire him. Like late in the season, that was kind of the word. And then, as you said, supposedly it came down from above that, well, if you don't want to get rid of him, we're going to get rid of you. And that pushed the final result. It was a miserable season. They were abysmal defensively. They were better, but not enough offensively, particularly when they didn't have their point guard, who was the only point guard on the roster. So when they were playing those road games, their offense was just a disaster. Weird season all the way around. I mean, there's no other word that I think is more appropriate than that, weird. And so now they start fresh. They start anew, as you mentioned. They bring in Dusty May, which I will say I think is a good hire for them relative to what they could have done. There are a couple of other guys that I actually think might have had slightly better odds of success. DeVries at Drake, who ended up at West Virginia. Nico Medved, who's still at Colorado State, I believe. Those were two mid-major guys. And actually, the coach Schertz from Indiana State, who is now at St. Louis.
Yeah.
I personally like all three of those guys a little better than Dusty May, but they're all crapshoots.
Yeah, right.
You know, when you're talking about guys moving up from mid-major to the high-major level, you never know for sure. It's a guess. You know, you could get Bill Self coming from Tulsa, or you could get, you know, name the failed coach at a Big Ten institution who's come up from a high-major. There have been lots.
Yeah.
You get John Gross.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And I could have pulled 10 other examples out of my hat, but you get my point.
Mm-hmm.
Dusty May obviously has that Final Four. So that's, you know, that's why he was such a hot name. And he's a guy with a Midwest background. He was a student manager at Indiana. He'd been an assistant at Eastern Michigan. So he's got a Midwest background. it will be interesting to see how things go. I think that the reason I liked those other guys a little better is all of them had longer, more sustained success than Dusty May has had. Dusty May's Final Four season kind of came a little bit out of the blue.
Yeah.
And then this season, while they were still good with pretty much the whole cast back, they were maybe seen as a slight disappointment, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the track record. Whereas somebody like Schertz, for example, absolutely dominant at the D2 level, absolutely dominant in a way you don't see. And then in 3 years, bing, bang, boom, had Indiana State, you know, to where they could have easily been an NCAA tournament team this year as an at-large team. They probably deserved it. Medved has a much longer track record of success at Colorado State. But certainly not a bad decision. I would never try to spin it otherwise. There's a chance that Dusty May is very good at Michigan. We will see. It's going to be a completely different team. I mean, they're going to bring back at most a handful of guys. I think Will Shetter is back. Trying to think. Supposedly Jace Howard might come back, which is weird, but possible. Not a lot of other guys. Other than that, I don't believe are slated to be back. Maybe Burnett has another year. I'm not sure, but it's going to be a portal heavy team, and you would expect that he's going to be able to land some guys in the portal.
Yeah,
but again, the flip side to that is this is part of the problem for Juwan Howard is institutional. It's two pronged. It's competitiveness on the NIL side. And it has to do with admissions, with academics, the ability to get transfers admitted to the school. Both of those things have been problems for Michigan. Now, Dusty May has a chance this year because his FAU guys, presumably, and they're expected to get 2 to 3 of those guys, is my understanding. They'll probably go because he's there.
Yeah,
I don't think they necessarily have to win an NIL bidding war. But beyond that, what other guys are they able to get? Well, that's where the rubber's going to hit the road.
Sure. Yeah.
And in listening to him talk, the way he talks, actually, his message, not worlds apart from Tom Izzo, really isn't. What I heard him say, and in fact, his FAU experience belies this, he built those teams. The vast majority of those guys, to my understanding, were guys he recruited out of high school.
Yeah.
And he has said he wants that. That's what he wants the backbone of his program to be. We'll see if he's able to do that. But it's going to be interesting. I would expect them to be improved next year because realistically, how could they not be?
Not much room.
They were that bad.
Well, if you're 14th, you still might not be in first place, or you might not be last this
time. Right. But not finishing in last.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Right.
I'm going to guess that they don't, but where this thing goes, I've said the problems there are systemic. They have to do with the way the basketball program is viewed institutionally.
Yeah.
And that bleeds into admissions, and it definitely bleeds into NIL. If they can fix those things to some extent, then, that puts them back on a level playing field. And at that point, it's down to how well your coach can recruit. And, how well he coaches that talent once he gets them. And there's reason to believe that Dusty May could be good. He might not be either. I mean, nothing's a lock. But, I would say if I were a Michigan fan, I would be feeling optimistic at this point. There's no reason not to. As opposed to the Juwan Howard hire, this one makes sense from a basketball perspective. You can defend this one much easier.
Right. Yeah. I mean, head coaching experience for one thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And the college level.
And he's already got one Final Four on his resume. You could say it was fluky or whatever, but he's got one Final Four on his resume.
Yeah.
That's, the name, the last coach, I don't think Michigan's ever hired a coach who had that on his resume when he got the job. Beilein had been to an Elite Eight. That was it. I mean, they've never hired anybody. I think Tommy Amaker maybe had been to a Sweet 16.
He played in one.
When they hired him. He played in them, but coaching one.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's pretty, that alone is kind of a statement. There aren't a lot of schools, period, that are able to hire a guy who's already got a Final Four on his resume. So, you know, that's a positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see how it turns out for Michigan and the rest of the Big Ten. And as it expands, and we have add four more teams. And so, as we do every year, we will have previews for those once roster season is finished. We'll definitely come back to you with more news and things that are going on with Michigan State, as we expect there'll be some hires and maybe some more movement as far as players go. And, you know, at this point, anything's possible with today's environment now that the season is truly over. We'll also try and get some interviews. If you have ideas or things you want us to discuss, certainly get a hold of us. You can send along ideas or questions to eric@tffinots.com. And I guess that's it. We'll be back. We'll try and come back weekly until things get going again for the preseason previews. So until next time, the Final Four is now on the schedule. Go Green.